It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He takes up off the middle, and he's wrapped up from behind. Max Crosby!
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years.
Open at the 35! Racing to the 20! 10! Touchdown, Raiders!
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Hour number two on Raider Nation Radio, Dan Graziano from ESPN joins us, and Tashawn Reed this hour. That's a pretty good insider hour as we continue. Today was the first day in pads over at practice, and that was a lot of fun. Good to see some hitting and some football. This hour is brought to you by the 872 Laborers, led by Tommy White. Tommy White's been a good friend for a long time, and his team is incredible, building the city on time and on budget. Tommy's always with me during football season. I get a chance to go and watch some of the game with him. Every game, it's a tradition unlike any other. I get in the building. I do the pregame show. I go see Tommy. He sets the tone mentally for me. We get ready for the game. Look forward to doing that again. Thanks to the 872 Laborers. When you see all the building going on in this valley, making Las Vegas great as the sports and entertainment capital of the world. Tommy and the 872 Laborers care. They do an unbelievable job, and I love supporting the 872 as we kick off this hour of the show. So if you're excited about the Raiders, you should be very excited now because we're having padded practices. So we want to hear from fans who went there today. So if you went out and you went to practice, we would like to hear from you today. What do you think about this? Because fans need to hear what's happening. Fans need to understand what's going on. And we're trying to get you fired up, but maybe you saw something at practice, and we want to find out what you think about this team and if you've noticed anything differently. A lot of Raider fans travel to practice. You travel to games, and maybe this is something that you're excited about going forward. Maybe you believe you saw something at practice with Pete Carroll. You just saw something a little bit different. So if you went out to a practice, let me know what it's like. Tell our fans about it, because Pete Carroll clearly wants everybody to go out. 702-365-9200 as we continue on. Tashawn Reed a little bit later on this hour. And Tashawn wrote a really good article on Eric Allen. And I will be in Canton on Thursday, so I'm excited to be there for that. So that's going to be a lot of fun. As I'm leaving on Thursday for Canton, Ohio, and I'll be there emceeing Eric Allen's Hall of Fame party in Canton, and that'll be a big crowd, big turnout for this class. Always thrilling to talk to Dan Graziano from ESPN, covers the NFL as good as anybody. Dan, I wanted to begin with this Baker Mayfield rework contract. Really seemed like he saved his career when he got out of Cleveland, had that cup of coffee with McVay in L.A., and then got to Tampa after Brady, and everything's coming to him, especially the money now.
Yeah, it's funny. I was at Buccaneers camp today. I was talking to Baker Mayfield. He could have given me a hint that something was coming. It would have been nice of him, but maybe I could have broke the story. But anyway, no, he's good. We were talking about his journey and how he ended up in Tampa and how it's sort of been this place where he's sort of been able to be himself and be comfortable and have success. So, yeah, he seems like a fairly happy and content individual right now. Obviously, they change coordinators on him again, but that happens pretty much every year of his career, so he's used to it. And the guy that they have now is a guy that was on staff last year, and they already have a relationship. So, yeah, we were talking about it. Like, you just never, ever know, and he's a testament to sticking it out. But to hear him tell it, he found a place where the message that the Buccaneers sent him when they signed him was, like, just be you and play football and it'll work out. And he felt like he needed to hear that at that point in his career because he felt like there had been a lot of voices early in his career telling him what he was supposed to do and what he wasn't. So, yeah, seems like a different guy and very sort of happy with how it's all worked out.
Yeah, you know, Dan, that I'm happy you said that. If we could elaborate on that more with a quarterback finding a home where he's comfortable and can be themselves. A lot of times the bonus babies, the first picks overall, it doesn't work initially, and then they get to another team, and then all of a sudden it slows down for them. They don't feel pressure to have to play initially. They get out there, and their career starts to take off again because they have the right fit around them, and then their family gets comfortable there. You know, Jared Goff's interesting to me, too, because he went to a Super Bowl in L.A. They let him go, and he feels really comfortable, like this is the right fit for him in Detroit.
Yep. I mean, Sam Darnold just had the 1 year in Minnesota, but obviously it was very successful. And Geno Smith in Seattle ascending to that role after Russell Wilson was traded, you know, a decade or so after he was drafted high in the second round by the Jets. So situation matters so much. The coaching matters so much. I'll never forget prior to the 2018 draft, I was doing an interview much like this one, and somebody asked about Lamar Jackson and said, do you think he'll be successful in the NFL? And I said, well, tell me who's going to coach him, because if he lands in the wrong spot, maybe not. But he did land in the right spot and has obviously had a, you know, he's obviously flourished with a couple of MVP awards. So, yeah, it matters. And, you know, we also – we treat these guys as finished products sometimes. Like where they're drafted. The guy's drafted number one, he's supposed to be like what Joe Burrow instantly was in Cincinnati. That's pretty rare. That guy's not in every draft. And I think it's important for people to remember that you know, these are still young players that have developing to do in a lot of cases.
Dan, you mentioned Geno Smith, and I'm out here at Raiders camp, and the ball's coming out nice. Aiden O'Connell even looks better. They got Brock Bowers, Ashton Jeanty, Michael Mayer, Jacoby Myers, 1,000 yards, didn't drop a ball. They drafted a couple of wide receivers here. And the offense just looks completely faster and just more explosive under Chip Kelly. Do you think this is going to be a better fit for Geno because of Brock Bowers and Ashton Jeanty, two players who could be generational talents? And if Geno just does his 4,000 yards and 70% completion percentage, the Raiders could excel quicker than maybe 2 or 3 years down the road.
Yeah, look, I'm a fan of Geno, and I think he's good. And I don't think people really understand how well he's played the last couple of years in Seattle. I don't think it was a lack of passing game targets or passing game, you know, skill position talent that was holding him back, if anything was, in Seattle. I think when he got in trouble in Seattle was when they had trouble protecting him. And I think he did a lot to mitigate the offensive line issues in Seattle last year with his play. But ultimately, that probably kept Seattle's offense from being what it could be. So now you're there at Raiders camp. So tell me, like, do they have enough on the line? Are they going to be able to keep him protected so that he can get the ball to all those guys that you're talking about? That, to me, is the question. Geno Smith is a good enough quarterback to help you overcome some substandard offensive line issues. He's not a good enough quarterback to completely rescue it, right? Like, I go back to Burrow. That year they went to the Super Bowl with pretty much no offensive line. Like, you know, Geno needs more than that.
Yeah.
And I think if the Raiders can develop that and get that going. And Chip Kelly's scheme, you know, will help, right? That will help the protection as well. You talk about the pace, and I'm sure there's a lot of moving around going on. So, yeah, I mean, I like the Raiders, but they're in the division with three teams who made the playoffs last year and probably all got better.
Yeah, Dan Graziano's our guest. I think the Raider offensive line is improved with John Spytek there and what they did in the offseason. Dan, you've been doing this a long time. You've seen Cleveland just be a graveyard for quarterbacks. Now with Kenny Pickett going to be out here, Shador looks good, but if he's going up against the twos and threes, Dylan Gabriel, I didn't think they needed Shador and Dylan, both of them, and Joe Flacco, I don't expect him to play the whole season. How do you think this is going to play out? Yeah. Is Stefanski going to get ahead of this, or is it going to be dramatic all year for the fans in Cleveland again?
The last thing he said, probably, like, it is the best thing that Cleveland got out of this year's draft, I think, was an extra first-round pick in the deal that they made with Jacksonville so the Jaguars could go up and get Travis Hunter. That positions Cleveland next year, if none of these guys work out, to draft a quarterback in a draft that I think a lot of people are expecting will have more and better options. If one of these guys does work out and you get to the end of this year and you're like, oh, yeah, Shedeur Sanders is our guy, or Dylan Gabriel's our guy, or Kenny Pickett, whoever, then you can use those two first-round picks to make your team better around that guy. And that's a good position to be in as well. So I think they're set up to figure it out over the next couple of years, but that does leave open the strong possibility that it doesn't get figured out this year, and they have more questions heading into next offseason.
Wrapping it up with Dan Graziano. Dan, you got a big seat on ESPN with some of the shows that were eliminated on Fox Sports 1, NFL Network, and their potential move. you know, Rich Eisen's coming over to ESPN. I follow the media real closely doing this long. Do you like where the NFL media is going forward? I mean, ESPN, obviously, your home team advantage there. But with Netflix, Amazon, all the streaming, and the way audiences are getting their information quickly from you at camp, YouTube and all this, are these bright days ahead for NFL media?
Wow, that's a good question. I was not expecting. It's tough for me to talk about, like, what might happen in terms of, potential mergers, acquisitions, all that kind of stuff, consolidation. So, I mean, I think you probably have to talk to somebody in ESPN PR to get a sense of what we're doing. Look, I think I've always, because I get people ask me, like, college kids, and like, do you have any advice on getting into this business? My whole thing is, like, be nimble, right? Because you don't know what the landscape's going to do around you. So I think what's kind of kept me going is I can write, I can do TV, I can do radio, like whatever they need, and be versatile. And I think, those of us who are in those positions, I think that's probably the best advice is sort of stay amenable to anything because you really don't know what's going to happen. And we could sit here and predict what it's going to look like in 5-10 years, but I think if we had done that 5-10 years ago, we would have got it wrong.
Yeah, that's why I asked that, because you got a big seat and give out a lot of advice. And, from your early days of reporting and trying to break news, and you still break news and do that, I mean, there's still fans out there that want quick breaking news. But as you said, when you write your deep pieces and you really go in depth, you still like that part of it where you can chase a story and take your time with it and put out something that's going to last a long time and have a legacy to it.
Yeah, and sort of inform and educate, right? Because if you're not going to break the story, right, if you're in a world where Adam Schefter at our place is going to break, probably 95% of the NFL stuff, what can you offer in terms of coverage of a breaking news story? Here's what this means for the next round of quarterback deals. Here's the behind the scenes on why and how this happened. There's a lot of information to get out there that isn't just so-and-so is now signing a contract with so-and-so. So I think that's a key way to look at it, too. Like, how much can you get people underneath the surface of what's going on and educate them about it? And I think there's always going to be room for that kind of stuff.
Where are you on the road to next after Tampa earlier today? What's your training camp tour look like?
So I'm driving. My next stop's Miami. So I'm driving down I-75 in western Florida. Going to go by Naples and then across to Miami. And then I'll fly up to Washington and see Commanders, Ravens, Eagles, maybe the New Jersey teams on my way home to Connecticut. I was in Atlanta and Jacksonville the last couple of days and then Tampa today. So that's kind of the swing for right now.
Keep the grind going. Thanks for making time for me. Great talking to you.
Love it. All right. I appreciate it. Take care.
You got it. Dan Graziano from ESPN. I don't think that question caught him off guard. I was just asking a media question because that's what we're doing. The growth of YouTube, the growth of McAfee, the lineup changes every year that happen, and he's got a big seat. He's on ESPN, and he has an opportunity to talk to a lot of people. That opens up a line for you, 702-365-9200. Let's get into Baker Mayfield. I watched Baker Mayfield. My son went to Oklahoma, watched him play college football there. I was the guy that said, go out and get Baker. I was the guy. When Baker Mayfield was getting batted around, said bring him to Vegas instead of Jimmy Garoppolo. I did it as closely as I could without crossing the line, without hitting the barbed wire. I thought Baker Mayfield was too valuable to pass on, too cheap of a price, and now Baker Mayfield's in a position now where his contract's getting redone and Baker Mayfield's getting big money, and he will be the next level of Kirk Cousins. It's a good analogy of Kirk Cousins being the first to be guaranteed $84 million. Baker just got a new $30 million, and he keeps cranking the money out. Mayfield was entering the second year of a three-year deal, entering year two, three-year, $100 million with incentives, and that pushed the deal to $115 million because they know they got their guy. He's a former Heisman Trophy winner, number one pick overall. He went to where most quarterbacks go to die in Cleveland. He got out of there. He matured. And he turned it around. In 2024, 41 touchdown passes, tied for second most in the NFL. 4,500 yards, 71.4% of his passes, both third most in the league. And he was right there for everybody to sign him. All around, all the NFL teams that needed a quarterback who passed on Baker Mayfield, Baker Mayfield is laughing at all those teams that passed on him because he's legit and one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Probably location. Probably, you know, just making sure, you know, you're not giving them free yards where, you know, if you pop it to them on the 10-yard line, we're starting when, you know, they catch the ball. And so if you give them 10 extra yards where, you know, they're just starting at the 10-yard line instead of the goal line, that's a huge, you know, that's kind of the hang time equation nowadays. So, you know, at a certain point, it's location on where the ball is placed, whether it's the corners, the middle, deep, short, whatever it is, you know, you got to kind of be more precise nowadays.
Daniel Carlson, and I hope the kicking game matters this year on the kickoff. It was highly overrated last year at camp. We were so nervous. We had to learn the new rules. Oh, my God, what could happen? And nothing happened all year. I thought it was the most overrated play in football. This year, I think it's going to get much more unique. I can't wait to see how the Raiders take advantage of it. I saw Deshaun Reed at every practice. He's got a great piece out at The Athletic. Eric Allen produced a Canton-worthy prime with the Eagles, but he believes it was his run with the Raiders that displayed the longevity necessary to punch his ticket to the Hall of Fame. I hope everybody can see this as Deshaun Reed joins us. A nice piece you put together, man. Well done here on someone we all care about, Eric Allen.
Appreciate that, man. It's a big week for him. You know, he had a long wait to get into Canton, but like I said in the story, you know, talking to him, he felt like, you know, obviously his prime was with the Eagles for sure. I mean, he made several All-Pro teams, Pro Bowls, et cetera. But it was that, you know, later stage of his career with the Raiders, you know, kind of those early 2000s, late 90s teams where, you know, he was out there with Charles Woodson and others on that defense to help to make a playoff run. He feels like that, you know, really sort of stamped him and gave him the longevity he needed, you know, to ultimately get into Canton this weekend.
Yeah, 100%. When you said that, because there are so many players, Deshaun, that can't get into the Hall of Fame because they don't have the longevity piece. And that helped him get to 54 career interceptions. And a lot of them were at the end of his career with the Raiders. I mean, I looked at Rod Woodson's career. There was a video out of him of all the interceptions he had. He was already a first ballot Hall of Famer, in my opinion, when he came to the Raiders after the Steelers and the Ravens Super Bowl run. But Eric needed some productivity, and the Raiders gave him an opportunity to make a lot of big plays, and he stepped up and did that.
Yeah, and that was after starting his career with the Saints. It didn't go so well. You know, the team was doing pretty poorly. He didn't have the same production he had with the Eagles, and so if that had been it for him, you know, he threatened to actually retire, you know, if the Saints weren't going to trade him to another team and allow him to play elsewhere. And if that had been the end of his career, he most likely wouldn't be, you know, getting to the Hall of Fame this weekend. So, you know, the Raiders have a long history of having guys come, you know, that maybe had a lapse in their career or they weren't as good as they were in their prime, and they sort of rediscovered themselves at the tail end, and he was another one of those guys.
Yeah, and then Eric's had, you know, a bunch of chapters in his life as a football player, as a broadcaster, and then the access that he has to the team here in Las Vegas and his ability to teach and break down film and do that. There's not a lot of people still left in the media. You know, you look at the landscape of ESPN and, you know, Fox and all that. There's not many guys who are still his age that can kind of paint a picture and back it up and have that gold jacket with it and handle a lot of media roles.
Yeah, like, you know, all these former great players know football, obviously, but it's one thing to know it and another thing to be able to communicate it in a digestible way where, you know, the average guy that has a 9-to-5 job can tune in and not be lost about what you're talking about, right? And so there's a skill to that, and also just being entertaining because nobody wants to, you know, hear a textbook talking to him to sort of drown him in information. And I think he's done a really good job, you know, post-career, sort of, you know, keeping himself relevant, you know, whether it's on camera, on the radio with you. And so it's been cool to see him, you know, because he's a fan of the game first and foremost. And I'm sure for him, a lot of it is, you know, as much as it is a job, it's just another way to stay around the game and continue to see it, you know, moving forward in the years to come.
Tashaun Reed is our guest. His new observation from day five of Raiders training camp is out right now. You can find it on his social media. Without giving us everything, because we want everybody to read about it, were you impressed today? Because as I was talking to you, I've seen more physical padded practices. I felt like today there was good physicality, but more padded practices down the road is when maybe a couple of anger issues, players on players, are going to get a little bit more chippy than what we saw today.
Yeah, it was good to see some physicality out there. I mean, that first week of training camp is basically extended OTAs, right? And so, you know, guys are running out there in shorts, and they're still doing valuable work when it comes to installing the systems on both sides of the ball and whatnot and working on their fundamentals. But, you know, especially for offensive and defensive linemen, this is really the first day where you can actually see, you know, where those both sides of those balls stand. And, you know, I think the offensive line held up pretty well throughout practice, you know, during team drills. I believe I only saw one sack, at least with the starters out there, when Geno Smith, you know, got quote-unquote sacked by Max Crosby. Obviously, there's no actual contact. So I thought the offensive line held up pretty well. And we saw a couple, you know, flash plays out there. Dante Thornton had probably the play of the day, getting open on a 65-yarder downfield. But there's some other guys. Brock Bowers made it over to a first down. You saw some of those sort of highlight-worthy plays from the offense, but I think on a play-by-play basis, it was pretty balanced. You know, I mean, the defense made some plays as well. Sergeant Corian Bennett towards the end of the practice, Gino tried another deep shot, and he managed to get his hand in there and knock the ball loose at the last second. So it wasn't like the offense was just running up the score out there. Like, obviously, they did have those big chunk plays, and that's what's going to get the most traction on social media because that's what, you know, gets people excited this time of year. But the defense held their own as well. And so I would say it was a pretty competitive, you know, first practice in pads, and we'll see how it goes the rest of this week.
As we wrap this up, you and I had a conversation today about Ja'Corian Bennett and the depth on the cornerback position, about his length or lack of length compared to some of the other guys. And, you know, I just assume that if he's healthy and what he's done in the past, he would be penciled in as number one. But I could be wrong on that. I'd like your opinion. And then on the other side, Darian Porter just never played a play in the NFL, so I don't know how long it's going to take for him to come along. And then some of the older cornerbacks that were brought in. Can you give me your idea as of today? And I know it'll change on the depth chart of the cornerback position.
Yeah, so since OTAs, is, I would say the most first team reps have gone to Eric Stokes, a veteran they signed this offseason from the Green Bay Packers. And then it's been Darian Porter out there, mostly with him. But, you know, I think it's a fluid situation. Since training camp has started, we've seen more of DeCameron Richardson, who was really thrust into the fire last year, wasn't really expected to play, but due to injury, they pretty much had to throw him out there. And it was a trial by fire. You know, he had some struggles as a rookie, but he seems more comfortable out there so far. Today, and during red zone drills, he had a play where Smith was trying to hit Trey Tucker in the back of the end zone, and DeCam read it and jumped it and picked it off in the back of the end zone for interception. And so he's made some progress. And those three guys, I would say Stokes, Porter, and Richardson, they have that sort of prototypical Pete Carroll makeup that he looks for in cornerbacks. So they're all like 6'3", 6'2". They're long. They have 4'3", 4'4", speed. That's what he looks for, right? That's his preference. And Bennett, you know, even though I would say he played the best when healthy last season amongst those guys that had already been in the league, and Stokes and Richardson, you know, the big question mark with him is, can he stay healthy? You know, both of his first 2 years in the league, he got hurt. You know, he is a little bit shorter. He's about 5'10 or so, give or take. And so he's fast, though. You know, he has that 4.3 speed, and so, and he's really athletic. So he does have some of those traits that Pete Carroll likes. And so I don't think he's out of the mix by any means. But it definitely, you know, I would say I had your mindset coming into OTAs. I thought he'd be pretty much a lock as a starter. Right. But that's clearly not the case. You know, he's going to have to compete and earn it if he's going to end up being a starter again on week one.
Tashaun Reed, as we wrap it up. So your impression of this compared to the early days in Costa Mesa? I mean, AP was good to both of us, and the weather was great. It hasn't been super hot here yet, but the players had to get on a bus from the West End and get there, and there's, you know, their locker room isn't 10 feet away like it is here. Just different overall with everything that went into that, and the fact that the players are just not with their families. The veterans are driving in. They're there. It seems to be much easier, smoother. Camps running offensively much sharper. What are some of your takeaways, first padded practice compared to Costa Mesa a year ago?
Yeah, I mean, they have all their facilities here, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like, they put a lot of money into making that site that they were at in Costa Mesa fit for what they needed to do. But it doesn't compare, you know, clearly to the facility here in Las Vegas. And as you said, you know, it really hasn't been as hot of a summer in Vegas as it usually is, you know, and especially with them practicing at 8:30 in the morning early. They've sort of been able to beat the heat for the most part. It's not cool or anything of that nature, but it's not as bad as it typically is. So they've kind of escaped that downside of it. And there really is the only downside of having a training camp here in Vegas for the guys, between the facility, the practice fields, like you said, having their family around, being able to go home to their actual houses and apartments at the end of the day. This is more convenient for the guys overall, and it helps the overall operation. And I think, you know, especially having a first-year regime, obviously there's coaches and front office members who've been here in years past, but for Pete Carroll and John Spytek, their first year here in Las Vegas, I think it's just cleaner for them overall to do it this way. I still think the door's open for them to go elsewhere in the future. That's something that we'll see, you know, if there's any developments on that, from that standpoint in the offseason. I don't think they're necessarily tethered to always doing training camp here in Las Vegas, but it's definitely not a bad place to be.
Deshaun, look forward to talking to you throughout the season. Great work on that Eric Allen column. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for coming on.
Appreciate that, man. Thanks for having me.
You got it, Deshaun Reed. Good to have him on as we continue here. I like that. You know, he's a really good grinding reporter, puts out a lot of content. Then it popped up on my feed, Eric Allen. I said, ooh, I want to read that. And he really did a nice deep job, deep dive on EA. And I think anybody who reads that will appreciate that. We will have a Best of Eric Allen Hour coming up on Friday, as I'm in Canton on Thursday. Vince Sapienza's in for me Thursday. Friday, we'll be on the ground for the gold jacket ceremony up there in Canton. And then we'll be back here on Monday. Patrick Graham on Sunday spoke to the media. I didn't hear it. I think he's really important with the scheme of this defense. Let's hear what he had to say.
PG, it sure looks like Malcolm is moving like the Malcolm of old for you. And I know how much you care for him personally as a player. How happy are you for him?
I'm excited for him to get a chance to get out there, get better. Glad he's back. His energy, both on the field and in the classroom, it's infectious. And the fact that he goes out there and he executes at a high level, it's always encouraging to see that. And it's a good example for the other players.
You guys got a Jermaine pretty late in the offseason process. How has he done in terms of picking up what you want, and what can he bring to the defense?
He's done a great job, been real diligent, finding extra time to meet, putting his, you know, getting his eyes in the playbook and getting used to how we do things. Again, you know, he's been playing with a good defense for a long time, and he's done a lot of roles when he was at the other place. But so he knows football, so that's a positive. And I'm just happy to have another weapon out there on the field.
You guys have had a few people rotating in the cornerback since OTAs. What have you seen just from the competition from that group?
The thing that stands out, they have a brotherhood, I would say. You see them hanging out in the cafeteria, you know, downtime at practice or before practice, all working on their craft together. The thing that's encouraging, you know, you see a lot of length out there and a lot of speed. You know, I mean, it's a space game in this league, and the receivers just keep getting better. You know, I mean, I wish LSU stopped having receivers, we would have less. I mean, they just have a whole bunch of receivers out there. But we got a good collective of a good group of fast, long guys, and then tomorrow we'll get to the physicality part in terms of seeing who's going to be able to support the run, see who can get their hands on people and press. So I'm encouraged.
Along those lines, you guys did make a lot of changes, not a lot, but changes at cornerback. But DeCamrion, this guy that's been here, kind of got thrown in the fire a little bit.
Who's that?
DeCamrion.
Okay.
Got thrown in the fire last year, saw him run with the ones today. What about his progress so far in this season?
For me, the best thing that could have happened, I just love the fact that, you know, the room is competitive. There are a lot of good guys in there, and it's driving all of them to improve, because if you have you got to be ready to go. There's a lot of good players in that room. So not to single out Cam, but the thing about Cam, I mean, he works really hard. He corrects his mistakes. And I mean, he has all the tools. He's long, he's fast, he's physical. We'll evaluate that a little bit more tomorrow. But I'm just real pleased with the progress he's made from rookie year to now.
How important is that to be able to rotate younger guys in and get them another taste of what it looks like maybe to run with the ones or even the twos?
They all got to get their experience out there on the field. This, the field, when we go out there to practice, and you know, it would be funny if you guys just tracked the amount of time from the head coach to the coordinators to position coaches, the time they spend on trying to get every minute of practice right, because it's truly the most important thing we do. I love my PowerPoints and the presentations on the playbook and all that stuff like that, a little speech here and there, but none of that stuff really matters. It's all about practice. So being able to rotate those guys, Joe and M-Rob doing a good job of rotating them, is priceless, and they need those reps out there. You need those reps.
Could you talk about Jonah Lalu, please?
Mm-hmm. Do you have a question? Oh, just open question. Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay. With what's happened, there's going to be a bigger role up for Krebs.
You see the smile on my face. Jonah, I just remember when he came for the local pro day. And, you know, he did a good job over there, the local pro day. Then, you know, he got drafted by Indianapolis, got cut. We got him. And I just saw a raw player with a lot of the physical traits that you want at the position. And so when you have those traits and then you combine that with the work ethic he has, and I would say the coaching he's getting from the position coaches, the coaching he's getting from the players, the examples like Max, like Adam Butler, he's trending the right way. He's still a young player. Not that that matters. He's a technician. He's physical. He's smart. And he's accountable. A lot of the things we're looking for.
You see, brought in a lot of veteran linebackers like Devin and Landon. Not only do those guys help the team, but how do you think they help the guys kind of like behind them, like a Tommy Eichenberg develop?
I think a big part for those young players to see examples of how to do it. You know, just like right now for me, I'm Pete's my example. I'm learning how to a different approach, and it's important to learn from the people that have done it before. So that's always a positive. You can see their example. You know, if you don't know something, you can ask a question. It's all applicable to me. If you look at me as a defensive coordinator, I can ask Pete. I can talk to Pete. It's the same type of progression, like with the same process with the player, I think.
How nice to have a versatile guy like Jeremy Chitten out there.
He's big, he's fast, he's physical, ball skills. It's wonderful to have him as a weapon out there. And then on top of that, the communication and him being able to communicate what he's seeing out there, not keeping it a secret, helping his fellow players out there. That's the more if we could be a noisy defense pre-snap and be a physical defense post-snap, we're trending in the right way.
He said, what about Jamal Adams?
Yes.
He's only been here a couple days, but what have you thought?
I mean, it jumps out. You know, each year is different, but, you know, his track record, physical, fast, dynamic playmaker. You saw some plays out there on the field. We'll find out some more tomorrow when we get the pads on. Great communicator, good energy, and it's been a pleasure to work with him.
We've seen Tyree take reps inside in the past. It sounds like he might do it a little bit more, try to. What does he bring in that versatility that he can do inside, outside? And what have you seen from inside that might be beneficial?
So once you bring an athlete like Tyree down there, so Tyree's long, he's got quickness, he's got play strength, and when you bring that down, it's a different matchup for the guard. So that's the first thing you're looking at there. And then from there, just getting them in the reps to develop a move, a counter move, move, counter move. You don't need a whole lot to start off. So get your go-to move and then have a counter off of it. So that's really what the process he's going through right now.
You feel like this is one of the more versatile games you've had this year?
There are several positions that give us some flexibility in terms of being versatile with the scheme. It's not quite as versatile and complex as everybody makes it out to. I try to tell the guys all the time, I'm trying to keep it down to five things I'm asking you to do. Realistically, like five things if you go through it, the process of it. So, but there's a lot of, we got some really good football players that give me some pieces to move around on the chessboard and then to play good defense. Just him continue to mature as a leader. More and more confident, you know, the success he's had is building his confidence. And, you know, as a communicator, he's going to be a main part of that in the middle of the defense, one of the main people communicating. The position calls for it, but he has to take it to another level there with the communication, and that's what I'm looking forward to the most.
How much are you trying to embed that these first couple of weeks so it just becomes competitive or contagious
as we reach August?
No, I'm sure Coach talked about it. It's relationship. We're in a relationship-based business. And so with those relationships that we build off the field, on the field, it makes it easier to communicate. You know, just right between the eyes, communication, you know, whether something's right or wrong between the players, coaches, the players, players, the coaches. And then on the field, in order to play defense, there's a lot of grass we're out there defending. If we could communicate effectively, be a noisy defense and kind of cut down the variables by seeing a cut split, seeing where the quarterback is, if he's under or in the gun, and cut down the variables, that puts it back in our favor a little bit because they have a play called and we're reacting to the play.
Make a transition from safety to linebacker with you guys. I don't know if you've coached a guy that made their transition before, but what kind of goes into pulling that off?
Really, when you look at linebacker safety, however you put it, like just talk about just basic cover three. If the safety's rotating in the box away from the nickel, I mean, he's no different than the Will if you sent the rotation the other way. There's a lot of similarities to the position. I've coached plenty of guys that have done that, and you see the trend throughout the league. You know, there's dime packages. They're getting linebacker reps, so it's nothing foreign to him.
All right, that was some of Patrick Graham, who met the media on Sunday and needed for that for homework to just understand more about his concepts, the players that he likes, what he's going to be doing going forward. And this is a very valuable piece, I believe, in the Raider organization now, Patrick Graham along with Pete Carroll, as they work together. And I could just imagine Pete and Patrick being in a room together late at night before a game, like a Thursday night before a Sunday game. You know, these guys work late. And Pete says to Patrick Graham, hey, look at this one more time. I want you to look at this cut up. I saw this. I noticed something about this inside move where we didn't cover it right. Can you fix this tomorrow? I mean, that's going to be invaluable. The ability of Pete Carroll, a defensive head coach who specializes in the secondary, going to Patrick Graham, I really believe we need to tighten this up before the Charger game. We need to tighten this up before the Cleveland game. I see something here where this is a team we should blitz a little bit more against. And for Patrick Graham, he's going to love that. Because if Patrick Graham does everything right this year, everything, which means the defense is vastly improved, the young cornerbacks and secondary play better, Max is healthy and is up for defensive player of the year, and he could win that this year, and these aging linebackers play well, that should be enough for Patrick Graham to be a head coach the year after this. It should be enough. He's a finalist for the Jacksonville job. There's going to be 6 to 7 coaches fired. Patrick Graham's going to get an interview, and he should get one of the jobs. That's what I think is going to happen. And if it takes 2 more years, it could have happened already for him. And then someone will be elevated. But this is important for Patrick Graham. Last year, the Raiders lost 10 games in a row. And it was hard because he's a grinder. This guy went to Yale. Right? This guy's smart. He could have did a lot of things in life other than coaching football. And he's really smart. One of the sharpest guys I've ever met. I'm excited to see what happens. Bobby asked me who's playing in the Hall of Fame game. I didn't know. I knew it was the Chargers because Antonio Gates is getting in. They'll play Detroit. So the first football game on NBC Peacock will be 5 o'clock Pacific time. Chargers-Detroit, the Hall of Fame game. The only Hall of Fame game I ever went to was the one the Raider played in. I have zero interest in going to the Hall of Fame game. But we'll be there. And hopefully I'll be in Bender's, the Blitnikoff's restaurant that they turned me on 2 years ago where all the Hall of Famers are with their jackets. Or the Raiders are going to have a lot of nice events lined up for us. When Mark Davis goes back to Canton and there's a Raider getting in, Mark does everything for that player and family to make him feel comfortable and have a good time. Mark Davis, very generous with the Hall of Fame. Remember, he's the leader, the guy who decided to buy rings for the individuals' families who didn't get a ring because the Hall of Famer was dead. And Mark said, no, no, no. No, you want to give this little commitment? No, we got to get him rings. And then Mark bought the rings. A lot of people got rings because Mark bought them. A lot of people don't hear that story much. He doesn't bring it up. But Mark's done a lot with the Pro Football Hall of Fame. His dad's a member of the Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. And for Mark, Mark's got an opportunity in front of him. Because by bringing the Raiders with the people that brought him here to Vegas, that's a legacy play. Now Mark needs to win a Super Bowl. It would be nice to have that and be remembered as a Super Bowl owner who brought a team to the sports and entertainment capital of the world and changed football for all the other owners in Vegas.
We need more. Hey, the invitation is wide open. When we have our open days, let's get all of our people in there. I'm okay if we overflow it. Okay, we can have as many as we want as we can. We can get in here. So the invitation is wide open, and we need them. It is a factor in our practice. It gives us a presence of there's people watching. We're never going to play a game where they're not going to be looking at us and watching us put us on big TV looks and all that. I want them to feel that as much as possible. So it's great to have them. We need more.
I didn't expect that. I'm happy Pete Carroll. And it's pretty easy. A lot of people thought that Pete would want people out of camp. He's basically saying, come one, come all. Let's overflow this place. There was a nice crowd out there today, first day in pads. All of our insiders, are, including myself, I'm sending out videos and photos. Appreciate if everybody could subscribe to my YouTube channel. There's some new exciting stuff coming. JT The Brick on YouTube, JT The Brick YT. And on Instagram, where my son says we're getting some really good impressions, JT The Brick LV. Yesterday, I got up very early in the morning to talk with Kim Wagner from News 3 LV.
Let's talk about the upcoming season with a seasoned veteran of covering the Raiders, JT The Brick. I don't want to age you, but is it at least three decades you've been covering the team?
Yeah, this is year 28 for me, Kim, and I've probably been more excited the last couple of days than I've been since the Raiders have come to Vegas. Optimism is sky high with Pete Carroll. And we're off and running in hot Henderson, and it hasn't been hot this week, so it's been pretty nice.
I know. It's been great. Let's get the breaking news out of the gate over with, and that is defensive tackle Christian Wilkins. They've cut him from the team, but there's a big price tag associated with that, and then also the questions of his position since he was supposed to be critical for the defense moving forward. So what's going on?
Well, this was a big signing when he came here to the Raiders, and unfortunately he got injured, and players get injured in the NFL, and he was going through a rehab, and now the Raiders and him were discussing how he was going to get through that rehab. Pete Carroll said it was a process. It was a very difficult situation, and the Raiders have decided to move on. They put out a public statement yesterday. They just couldn't get him on the field, and we'll see what happens going forward in regards to the guaranteed money left on his contract. It's really unfortunate, Kim, because he was a great player, an elite player when he came to the Raiders, and players get hurt, and sometimes players can't get back on the field, and it's disappointing. But the good news for the Raiders is they drafted two young defensive tackles in the draft. They got other players who can step in, including Adam Butler, who signed long-term, who's a really good player. And that's Max Crosby's unit up front on the defensive line with Malcolm Kuntz, who's coming back healthy. So I still believe that's the strength of the Raiders, the defensive line, but it's unfortunate that they lose out on a really good player.
And Wilkins has filed a grievance with the NFL Players Association. We'll see how that plays out. Let's focus on the positive. Pete Carroll, and we have Chip Kelly. I remind everyone that Chip Kelly just won a national title running the offense for Ohio State. So to have Pete Carroll, Geno Smith, and Chip Kelly, as a Raiders fan, confidence has to be sky high.
Yeah, and Brock Bowers is one of the best players in the league. So this is all about Pete Carroll and John Spytek, the new GM, and Pete Carroll. It's all about competition, Kim. When they walk in, there's signs that say, compete, all in. And he just does it differently. No disrespect to the other coaches of the past, but this is a legend who's coached in two Super Bowls, won one, the national championships at USC. He just runs practice and the culture of the organization differently. And now the Raiders have one of the best chances they've had on offense. Geno Smith can throw for 4,000 yards, 70% completion percentage. Brock Bowers is already one of the best players in the league. And they went out and got Ashton Jeanty from Boise State. UNLV fans should know him well. And he is a great young player. If he has a breakout year, as I'm predicting, if he has a monster year on the ground, the Raider offense will stay on the field. The defense will be rested more. Allegiant Stadium will turn into a more of a home field advantage. And this thing's about to turn the corner. The excitement is real throughout Raider Nation.
How about that? Kim Wagner. Good friends with Kim. She does a great job. Married to Dana Wagner, one of the great newsmen here in town, and excited for that. So that was fun. That was at 6:15 in the morning, Bobby. That is early. Hey, before I go, I want to congratulate friend of the show, CC Sabathia. CC Sabathia is a member of the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Here's little CC.
I am so proud and humbled to join you as a Hall of Famer. Even Ichiro, who stole my Rookie of the Year award in 2001.
So CC used to listen to me on the radio when he lived in Hayward from Vallejo. So he came up to me on the sidelines of San Diego for the Charger game once. Someone came up to me and said, CC wants to meet you. And he was a guy named Grady Sizemore. And he said, Grady, this is JT the Brick. I've been listening to him since I was a kid. And that's CC Sabathia, man. And now he's in the Hall of Fame. Love that guy. He loves the Raiders. CC Sabathia is real Raider Nation. And I'm sure the Raiders are going to have him out at a game. I'm almost positive because he comes out every year. And this year, like Eric Allen, he'll return to Allegiant Stadium as a Hall of Famer. Q's up next. Make sure you listen right here on the flagship.